think about what you want to feel and work backwards from that. Oftentimes, head and heart do have natural friction, but the heart feels unwavering. When it comes to my heart, there's no denying that.
Welcome to Lessons in Creativity, where we'll explore the creative process across different disciplines and learn how to harness this natural part of our human experience. I'm Jenna Massey. My guest today is Rachel Zaslaw. Rachel is a multi-hyphenate, multi-passionate person. By day, she leads product marketing teams in tech, but she is also the co-founder and host of Storytell, an immersive storytelling gathering in which guests get to explore the human experience and connect with one another through real-life stories. I recently attended my first storytelling event, and it was magical. Shout out to David Dubinsky, who introduced me to Rachel. Here we go. All right. Welcome, Rachel, to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be on.
So to start, I want to take you back to yourself as a child. So thinking about you, let's say age 7, 8, 9, in what ways did creativity come out at that age?
So I so vividly remember this incredible community called Journey on Saturday that I grew up with, where essentially you got to sign up for 3 periods on Saturday, and they could be anything from origami to magic to Italian cooking. And it was my first foray into having literally a catalog of endless possibilities of how I wanted to spend my time and how I wanted to express myself creatively. And it allowed for me to explore creativity in like a really no to low pressure way, knowing that we're all newbies and we're all, just like beginners at a certain art style or pursuit. And I think that that was really like my first formative memory of what it meant to have like a creative practice or explore creativity. But I had always really had this unabashed creative mind as a kid. I especially found that it was much easier to express myself creatively as a child because you were less concerned about imposter syndrome or what other people thought of you or about, you know, being compared to experts in a way. Mm-hmm. Being a child really enables that ability to lean into being a newbie at something. And it really created a platform for me to experiment.
I love that. Okay. So then as you think about like moving into adulthood, in what ways did you kind of keep that creative expression alive? And in what ways did it maybe become a little bit more shielded?
I feel like creative expression was something that I started to do a little bit more independently and less collaboratively. Mm. As I alluded to earlier, I felt that as I got older, there was this imposter syndrome or this hierarchy of how good you were at something. And you started to see people's ability really take shape. We weren't all novices. We were, you know, choosing to spend our time in a certain way or choosing actively to not spend our time in a certain way. And that meant that my passion for photography was then up against people that ended up pursuing photography as, you know, a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And I found myself kind of stifling my creative output and my creative expression, especially in a public way. But I think that lately, I've really been coming into my own confidence with my creativity and knowing that my creativity is not something that can be measured or scaled and that it all just comes from within me. And I'm so passionate about being able to tap into this childlikeness, not just from like a wonder and curiosity perspective, but also from the perspective of being new at something and showing up and maybe not being great at it, but learning through doing, and also learning and being creative without the expectation of production and thinking that like there needs to be an end result to come out of creative expression. Things like journaling or even just like working on art that never will see the light of day or you'll throw out the next day, just creating for the sake of creating, I think has really unleashed some of my expectations I had around this like perfectionist tendency that started to meddle into my creativity.
Yeah, I love that because I think there's often this perception that creativity is reserved for those who are quote unquote artists or, you know, have a profession dedicated to their work and their art. But I love that you've kind of created that ability to bring your beginner's mind and child attitude to creativity just to create for the sake of creation.
Yeah, totally. It's not always easy.
And
I find myself oftentimes just wanting to create to share with others. I recently started writing in a Substack or like a, you know, digital blog. And it was interesting because I would write a draft of something and I was like, oh, it only matters if other people get to experience it or other people get to see it. And that sort of external validation I was looking for within my creativity, something that like I still face.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a huge challenge. You know, in sharing with others and to your point that you brought up earlier, also putting yourself up against other artists and others who are maybe, you know, doing this full time. And, what have you found just like digging into that? What have you found to help with that?
I guess like the fundamental question of like, what defines an artist? Like who is an artist? And you could argue that like anyone that makes art is an artist. And what is art? It is, I mean, I don't know the Merriam-Webster definition, but something that someone has created and has deemed art. And a lot of the choice and decisioning behind how I want to perceive myself is based on my own limiting beliefs. And I can call myself an artist if I want to be an artist. I actually read an article earlier today about how if you cultivate certain behaviors and you model certain behaviors for yourself, you feel more confident in calling yourself or labeling yourself as such. So if I do art constantly, I can then, you know, call myself an artist, or I feel more confident calling myself an artist. But I think it's a little bit more challenging when you're like calling yourself an artist, but not necessarily having the behavior to back it up. And so I've found that the more I do create, the more I feel confident in calling myself a creator. The more art I make, the more confident I am in calling myself an artist. And I don't really rely on what other people deem as artistry or not. You know, that's for me to decide.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. It's like you're talking about this concept of identities. And I feel in talking to a lot of others as well, I feel there is this like almost this shyness that sometimes comes at the beginning that you're talking about of like of actually taking on the title of writer or songwriter or, you know, artist, whatever it may be. And it's almost like this delicate thing that starts really hidden inside of us. But I love your concept of, you know, if you're actually doing the thing, you know, and defining it for yourself, then it gives you the confidence to take on that identity.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're getting right into it to start. I love it. So I would love to talk to you about Storytel. So first of all, would love for you to just explain a little bit about what it is. And then I would love to hear the story about, you know, how you really started this.
Yeah, for sure. So Storytel is a gathering of stories to help to facilitate connection among people. So people come in a really casual setting. There's a theme every time we host. So we've had themes such as duality or power, head versus heart, full circles. And people will come and either be community members to just hold space for others, or they'll share their own 5 to 10 minute personal story based on that theme. And the way that Storytel differentiates itself from other storytelling events is that people don't show up to be entertained. Mm. People are not preparing stories. Very rarely are people reading off of a piece of paper. People are just speaking directly from their heart space. And it's like very little head, very heavy on the heart. Mm. And by hearing other people's stories, people are able to identify with the emotions and the experiences that other people have had throughout their lives, whether that be a shared experience or just a shared emotion that came out of that experience. And it helps us feel that we're like not so alone in what it means to be a human. And it's created such a safe space for people to express themselves, to do the scary thing of, you know, public speaking or share in front of a group. And it's also allowed for people to feel a deeper sense of connectedness. People show up with an open mind, a sense of curiosity, wonder, and vulnerability. And it's so palpable in the experience at Storytel. And it all kind of originated, as many things do, from a personal need. Mm. So I had had kind of a crummy winter last year. And I said, Rachel, I'm going to let you have a crummy winter, but I'm going to set you up for a perfect spring. And so I had signed up for all of these activities, pushing myself out of my comfort zone. I signed up for voice lessons because I want to be a rock and roll star. I signed up for this dinner for strangers. And I showed up at this dinner for strangers and we were talking about adult relationships. And I was expressing about how living in New York City, but being raised in New Jersey, I'm surrounded by people from my childhood, from different stages in my life. And oftentimes when you have friends from earlier stages in your life, you realize that they don't necessarily grow with you in the way that meeting new friends in your adult life might align with your values or perspectives. And I found that a lot of my social interactions were meeting up for dinner, exchanging the questions of how's dating, how's work, how's family. All right, let's get the check. And it was so transactional and reporting on life lived. And I was so much more interested in learning about the deeper meaning of life through connection. And so I said to myself, you know, if I build a space for this kind of people, then I will attract that kind of people. And at this dinner, I was saying about how I feel like society puts such an emphasis on building romantically and the building of families and the building of cohabitation and building a home together. But being in my early 30s and being really independent and living on my own, I really craved building platonically with someone. And my co-founder, Samani, points across the table and she was like, I want to build with you. We both really realized that we had had similar struggles and we're looking for similar things out of our social lives. And so we built it just about a year ago.
Wow.
And it's been so special.
That is beautiful. That's an amazing story. Really incredible. I love that you said that it came from a personal need, because that's such a universal experience.
Totally. I think that it makes it much easier to understand your audience when you are your audience. And I take a lot of this from my work as a product marketer. Constantly, I'm having to empathize with my consumer, with my end customer. And if I have shared experience with that customer, if I can empathize with their life stage, what they're going through, what their pain points are, I'm able to build a much more cohesive and customer-centric understanding and, you know, positioning of my brand for what that audience needs. And I think that that's similar when it comes to art. And in my case, my art as an experienced designer, I think that's like a newish title that a lot of facilitators and event organizers have given themselves, because there is such art that goes into what it means to create and design an experience for other people. Mm-hmm. It's how do you want people to feel? What do you want people to get out of it? What do you want people to take away from it? How do you want people to enter your space? And all of these things are accounted for. And it makes it all the more easier when you feel like you're building it for yourself and you have that direct empathy with your audience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So along that note too, I'm curious, can you speak to like, what do you think are some of the key ingredients that go into creating this and curating this vulnerable environment?
I think leading with heart has been the number one thing for me. And I think that there are a lot of choices that I've had to make with my brain on how I operate Storytel. But I think that leading from a heart space and knowing the kind of container that I want to build for my audience and for my community, and doing that from a heart space creates such an authentic and real space. And I say this in the sense that, like, in my past, I have doubted my brain. I've doubted my thoughts because I believe that there's more information out there for me to consume that could better inform my opinion or my perspective. But when it comes to my heart, there's no denying that. There's no questioning of, is this right or wrong or good or bad? There's no binary to that. And by leading with my heart, I can lead with confidence, and people feel an immense amount of trust in being in spaces that I hold because of that vulnerability and that heart space that I lead with myself. I also think, like, being a creator that leads with curiosity, so constantly looking to understand others, understand the world around you, understand how moments made people feel, be open to feedback, and be open to your own introspection about your own events that you host, I think make for not only a great static event, but also thinking about how it evolves and how it takes shape for your audience. I'm always thinking 100% about, like, how can I make this experience richer for my community? And I've been hitting an interesting inflection point where there's a big opportunity to monetize Storytel. And we've started to charge a nominal $20 sliding scale to attend Storytel. But I've seen a lot of communities that have taken more of a capitalistic approach and have focused on the monetization of their communities. Community has been something that both, like, companies and individuals have found is something that people are willing to pay for. But I'm so of the mind that whatever I build needs to be for my community first. And when it starts to be monetarily driven, it loses its soul. And being soul and audience first is so, so crucial, I think, to the success of Storytel and to, you know, being an experienced designer.
Yeah. Wow. I love that answer. And I love, especially the leading with the heart. That's like a lifelong process, right? Of, like, kind of balancing and working through and listening, figuring out how to really listen to the heart over the head, kind of check one another. But, it comes through in the way that you speak of, you know, not losing the soul of this thing that you've created.
Totally. I think that oftentimes head and heart do have natural friction, but the heart feels unwavering. It feels undeniable. And it feels a little bit more flexible and playful. It allows for me to experiment without thinking about the constraints of, is this a good idea or a bad idea? Mm. Is this right? Is this wrong? Mm. And also, I mean, being able to iterate and like walk back from things. I A/B test pretty much at every storytell. I test out a new hypothesis. Mm. I'm like, all right, some stories have dragged on. Let me see if we can add a bell at 7 minutes and then 10 minutes to indicate people to, you know, keep it concise. Mm. Does that help? Mm-hmm. I have, you know, played around with different icebreakers or openings. We've, you know, tested out different venues, different quantities of people. Can we maintain the same amount of intimacy with 50 people as we can with 30? And knowing that it's all just a test, it's all just trying something on, really lowers the stakes and allows for it to be playful and fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that experimentation mindset. I love it. So what do you think has been your biggest surprise since starting this?
I think it's been most surprising at how much I enjoy the experience. Mm. I always knew that I wanted to build something that felt sustainable for me to continue it. And that meant that I needed to enjoy it. But the model that we've built allows for me to not only be a host and a facilitator and an experience designer, but it also allows for me to be an audience member and a participant. Mm. And I think if you want to scale and sustain events, you have to find enjoyment in it. Mm. And constantly checking myself, thinking about, wow, the demand is so high. We should be hosting 3 in a month instead of 1 or 2. And I was like, you know what? I don't personally have the capacity to hold 3, and I don't really want to host 3. Mm-hmm. And really like taking into account my own value that I get out of the events, I think has been really surprising. And I think another thing that's been really surprising is just how moving the event has been for people and how impactful it's been. People have shared constantly that they've told a story that they've never told before to anybody in their lives, which is crazy. In a room of strangers, it's actually not that crazy because we tend to be a little bit more open when we're anonymous than, you know, in a room of people that know us most closely. And that's some psychological concept that I don't quite have words to right now. But the fact that people have cried and connected and just keep coming back, I guess I'm not that surprised, but it always does just blow my mind how much value people get out of it and the things that people share about, you know, what the experience meant to them. And they show it in continuing to come and continuing to share and bring their friends. It's just such a reminder that like I'm onto something, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that concept of like important strangers is a really interesting one. I've experienced that with songwriting myself and sharing, you know, it to an anonymous audience. And I'm curious, like, if you have thoughts of like why that is. I think part of it may relate back to what we were speaking about with identities, but I'm curious just to hear your thoughts too.
It's interesting because I felt like as Storytell grew and more of my core friends started showing up to Storytell, I found that I was telling stories less. Mm. And it definitely like played into this reality that I was much more comfortable telling a story to a room of strangers than to a room of friends. Mm-hmm. And to me, the reason that this behavior exists, and I'm no psychologist, but I believe that people that have known me for a certain amount of time have predisposed understanding or a perception of me. Mm-hmm. And I, in a way, am like upholding that perception that they have of me. But if I were to share a story about maybe a challenging moment I had with my parents, where a friend, a childhood friend, had seen only nothing but extraordinary and loving and compassionate connections between me and my parents, might kind of negate my truth and be like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, you had such a great relationship with your parents. And I feel like I'm able to write my own story or put words to my own story in a way that I don't feel like anybody in the audience has ammunition to combat that in any way. And I use these like strong words like ammunition and combat, but I really more so mean it in terms of people have an innate understanding of who you are, especially if they've known you for a long period of time. And the undoing or the uncategorizing of humanity can be really hard and sometimes challenging to face.
Mm-hmm.
I think also something that I've noticed in kind of opening my heart in a room of strangers is I feel like there's not this like sense of emotional burden that comes along with the aftermath of sharing that story. So I can share the story and people can just say, wow, that inspired me, or wow, I related to that, versus like wanting to dig a little bit deeper with me. Mm. And sometimes like stories are just meant to be shared and not dug into. We don't have like a Q&A, and we don't have people ask questions unless they invite that in after they share a story. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes we just want to put things out in the world without like the coddling and the consoling, and we want to let stories be stories and not kind of like open up the layers of of depth that maybe are required or expected in deeper relationships.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It's like you're creating a space for stories to be held. And that's like in a lot of ways like a fundamental need of us, just to be seen and to be heard.
Exactly.
But we don't always want to go into more. I also think like what you were speaking about with, you know, the perceptions of those who know you. I think it reminds, like, I think it also comes back to like that concept of identity is in the same way that it takes us a while, or we're attached to like certain identities within ourselves. And it takes us a while to take on new identities. It's like the same reason why it's hard to share with those who know us or who see us in a certain way that, you know, we're maybe trying to evolve past.
Totally. I've really been trying to embrace more of this like concept of duality and the acceptance of two seemingly opposing things coexisting within me at the same time.
Yeah.
But I know that people who have known me through my childhood probably see me on a little bit more of a binary, or maybe that's just a false perception that I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And I feel that same way too. Yeah. It's sometimes it is just a perception. But yeah, really interesting. I think the other thing that is really interesting to me about the way that you run Storytell is that you start with a very universal theme, like you described some of them earlier. And like in to me, and like I think in a lot of creativity, it's as you described, it's like it comes from a lot of times it comes from such a personal place of pain or experience that feels so personal and feels so alone. And it's not until you actually like get the work out there, or the writing or the song, that you realize that it's actually quite universal. And I love what you do with Storytell is that you actually start with a universal theme. So I'm curious like how that has played into what, you know, what happens and what gets experienced there.
Yeah, we're really intentional about the themes that we pick because we don't want to pigeonhole them into being stories just about work or just about romance. Mm-hmm. The themes are intended to be interpreted in a lot of different ways. So, for example, the theme of power, the prompt was, what was a time that you felt in power, or what was a time that you felt powerless? What was a time that you had a relationship with power that was taken from you? And so it allows for people to interpret the theme in a way that resonates most with them and with the story that they want to tell. But we start off with icebreakers and usually asking a question of everybody in the community that shows up that day about how that theme kind of is pertaining to them in that moment. And it gets people's minds kind of running on that theme. I find it super interesting that as people tell stories, you'll see people start to crawl their way into the center of the circle and put their name in the bowl.
Wow.
Because they're then inspired by other people's stories. Mm. So whether that was like a specific instance or even a city or a mentioning of a name that sparked a story that was resonant with the theme, I find that the best ways to uncover personal stories is by hearing other people's personal stories. And that really like shows the intricate weaving of our lives and how, even if we haven't experienced the same thing, the emotions, the processing, the characters played in the event that you're describing are things that people can really bond and connect over. And you'll see, like, people will share a story about how challenging it was to meet a group of friends, or how they overly romanticized, the idea of having a friend group. And after storytelling, you see a flock of people run over to that person. They're like, oh my God, I felt that way too. Or I still feel this way. And people are able to kind of co-process together. Mm. And this feeling of unloneliness in just knowing that it's sometimes really shitty feeling to think that there's like no new ideas, no new experiences in the world, but it's also kind of comforting that, you know, that people have been here and like humans are complex and we all are so egocentric in thinking that we are like the stars of our own show, but we're all kind of going through it and experiencing a lot of similar things. And there's a lot that we can learn from each other to help get through some of the tough stuff.
Yeah. And it's incredible to have spaces like this to be able to realize that. 'Cause it's like, no matter how much we know it, we always forget it. Right.
Totally.
And I'm curious, like, to your, curious just on your thoughts, like, or for your thoughts on why is it so hard for us to share these experiences in like a non-facilitated way? Like why don't we as humans, like, why aren't we able to share these things more often in our day-to-day lives?
Yeah. I think back to like what you were saying earlier about identity and perception. People want to uphold a certain perception of themselves, and being in this safe container that's intended for vulnerability, we've set rules and guidelines and suspended the reality of like, no matter how successful you are in your professional career, no matter how affluent you are, no matter what you're going through and what you identify as on the outside world, we're all kind of going through similar things. And it's giving us permission to go there while holding the duality that we are multifaceted and I can both exist in this vulnerable space, but also be incredibly successful and perceived as incredibly successful by whatever barometer I think success is. And I think that people just crave being held to a standard, being held to an ideal of how they move through the world. And I think we're sometimes afraid to go there. Like, storytelling has a lot of adjacencies to a group therapy session. Mm, and it can sometimes feel really heavy and really exhausting and pensive. And sometimes people don't want to go there. And I test the waters sometimes when I'm in these more casual friend settings and I'm out to dinner and I ask the deep question and I go, okay, is this person following me into the deep end or are they coming back up to the shallow end? And I know how to kind of navigate the conversation based on where they're willing to take it.
Yeah.
But people are sometimes not ready to go there, or they don't have the words for it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I also think that a lot of people think that their stories are sometimes a burden, you know, you show up in social situations as, you know, wanting to provide light and energy and, you know, positive vibes and the whole hashtag no bad days and everything's groovy. And I think in our deepest relationships, we do hopefully hold that space for each other, but in more of these, like, I don't know, shallow and more periphery friendships, there's this innate feeling that bringing the heavy stuff is going to weigh someone down or be a burden. And I think we're all just trying to be liked. And by being at Storytell, we set the standard that by sharing your vulnerability is to be liked or is to be received. And I don't know if our society is really built for that among the other, you know, titles and ideals that we hold for ourselves as, you know, working professionals and parents and, you know, students.
Yeah. Well, it's a really beautiful space that you've created and touching a lot of people. So
thank you.
Yeah.
I feel so too.
Yeah. So there's this concept in creativity, great artists steal. And I'm curious, in your process of creating Storytell or your own writing, like, do you have community organizers or others that you look to for inspiration and really pulling together ideas from them to kind of create your own?
Totally. It's really interesting because I was talking to a friend yesterday about this desire to consume less and produce more. And
absolutely. Yeah.
This reality that if I wanted to, I could copy paste a community or an experience that's already been proven successful and just do it in my own way or put my own twist on it. But I love the thought of, like, coming up with things on my own, even if they've been done before. So I do have some muses and people that I read a lot about and read their newsletters and, like, think, you know, what would this person do? But I also am really trying, especially this year, to lean into more of my own unique thoughts and wondering what it would be like if I just followed my own playbook and followed my gut and just took chances and tried something on versus, you know, repeating a previously successful model. But I try to pick and choose and take pieces from lots of different people. David Spinks is a community guru, and Priya Parker wrote The Art of Gathering, which is all about just a little bit more of, like, the constructs of what makes a great gathering. I think really deeply about her premise of you have to exclude to include and thinking that Storytell is not intended to be for everyone. It is a really self-selecting event, and people will come because they're opting into the kind of environment that I'm building. And I think that that's really healthy. But there are also some, you know, micro community organizers in New York City that I really admire. Akponoluo of Sound Shop, he, at the end of every gathering, will ask his community, are there any offers or requests that you have of your community? So he creates this stage to create some, like, linkages among people that have shown up for the event that night. And I just, like, really admire people that live in their truth and lead from a heart space. Tonight I'm going to journaling class with Emily Chertow, and she just, like, vomits glitter everywhere she goes. And it shows in her events and the way that she shows up and the language that she uses. And I think so much about this desire to be polished or to achieve publicity or recognition on the main stage as being, you know, a sought after event in New York City. But at the same time, I'm so much more concerned about, like, my integrity and my humanness. And I also find that that attracts a lot more authenticity. So I think there are a lot of amazing best practices and thinking about, you know, scaling and offering like alternative aspects to a community. Like what can Storytel become or what else can it offer? But leading from a place of inner knowing feels like the best teacher.
I love that. Yeah. I love that you know, trust yourself with that and also recognize that it's more fun that way. And it's more, it's fulfilling kind of a basic need as well.
I mean, I see in community organizers what I want to see in myself. Mm-hmm. And the things that I admire most about these experienced designers are that they lead with their heart.
Yeah.
And so if I want to be anything like them, I better lead with my heart too, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Where do you see this evolving in the future?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about it. I really intend to maintain having a full-time job on the side of hosting Storytel. And the reason for this is because I, like I mentioned earlier, want to make sure that what I do is for my community and not to like support my livelihood and make decisions around monetization that don't support my community. I think Storytel will always maintain its integrity as kind of like an entry point into what I offer, into the spaces that I hold. But I want to experiment with some higher ticket events, some more exclusive events. I've been thinking about like supper and stories and hosting kind of a, you know, 3-course family style meal with, you know, smaller scale stories over a dinner table. I was talking to my friend who leads adult summer camps about what it would look like to host a Storytel summer camp and enabling people to explore the stories we tell ourselves, the stories we want to tell ourselves, and the stories that we tell each other. And how does storytelling play a role in, you know, connection and facilitation on a larger scale, you know, over a weekend at a retreat? And, you know, I've also been toying around with like, how do I offer some of this knowledge and wisdom in a one-on-one setting or in a group setting? Yeah. It's all kind of on the table, but I always intend for Storytel to maintain its place as like a gathering of community, something that's accessible and something that maintains its purpose as we continue to grow in other areas.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Excited to see where it goes.
Me too.
All right. Well, to wrap up, I'll just ask maybe one last question. I'm just curious, you know, what advice would you give to someone who's starting out either in, you know, starting with as an experienced designer or other forms of creativity? What advice would you leave them with?
I would say that think about what you want to feel and work backwards from that.
Love that.
Art can feel really selfless, but it also needs to be selfish, I think, to be sustainable. And I think the other piece of advice that I would give is to treat everything as an experiment or just trying something on. And knowing that you can stop at any time, you can pivot, you could rebrand, you could scrap it at any time. And it's just the act and the muscle of doing and creating that enables you to have like a better sense of self and a better sense of what you want to create. But I'm going to quote one of my favorite bands, Rush. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. And I think that to dream or wish of a community or an experience or an exploration of something is one thing, but to actually put pen to paper, put an event out into the world, to be vulnerable and to take micro risks is just like the dopamine goes through the roof.
Yeah.
Even just for trying.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're timid to start it on your own, find someone to co-host with you or find someone to just champion you, whether that be a friend or a family member. You don't have to do it alone, and start romanticizing platonic intimacy and building platonically with others.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Of course.
And before we wrap up, tell us where we can, how can we attend Storytell and how can we get more information about it?
Yeah. So you can follow along on Instagram at StorytellNYC. We post all of our tickets. We drop our themes for the events on there. And once you've RSVP'd on Partyful, you'll get a trigger every single time that we launch an event. So you'll be invited. And we're also looking to expand to other cities. So if you're interested in hosting your own Storytell, I'm working on a handbook that I can hand off to other people that want to bring this sort of event to their communities.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Rachel, for being here. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. I had such a great time.
Awesome. Well, we'll wrap up there. Hope you enjoyed my episode with Rachel Saslaw. Let me know what you thought of it and what lessons you took away by leaving a comment on the Lessons in Creativity Instagram page. Thanks so much, and stay tuned for more lessons.